I think the biggest advice I would have for high school students would just to be, number one, understand that you are your biggest advocate. If you even feel like, well, I don't know, this just doesn't feel right, follow your gut. Don't just accept someone's word for it that, oh, well, this is okay or this is fine. No, follow up.
Welcome to Invisible Not Broken. Today, we're talking about the gaps in support for disabled folks within the education system, disability representation in media, and how abled folks can help those with disabilities. Our host, Monica, is joined by advocate and content creator, Nick Clemens, who lives with sickle cell disease.
Nick, I am so excited we're finally doing this. I feel like the epitome of sick people trying to do something together.
It is.
I think it's like, what, the fifth time we've tried to schedule this?
Yes.
Yeah. Every time you apologize, I was like, no, I was going to cancel too. It's okay.
Okay. Because I felt so bad. I was like, oh my goodness. Like, this lady is going to think that I'm just like a disorganized person in the world. Just can I get the date or time correct?
Not even a little bit. I swear to you, like, I'm at this point and be like, where someone says, like, I have to cancel. I'm like, oh my God, you're my favorite human today. Thank you.
I'm getting to that point too. Because I will be like stressing myself to the max. Like, okay, let me get there and do these mental gymnastics. How I'm going to make it happen. And then I'm fed because I made it happen, knowing I sacrificed some of my time, myself, my energy. And so the canceling is like, that's a good thing of getting older. That is a benefit of, you know, like that cancel is the best thing ever.
I swear it's like this absolute relief. And there's so much we're talking about getting older with disability and whatnot. But what is that? Oh, sorry about that. There we go. Me and getting out of bed was not going to happen today. So yay, we get to.
Well, understandable.
The reason we ended up starting to talk was I found you on TikTok and you were talking about something that was like one of my biggest passions. I used to be a teacher before I got really sick and the lack of access in education. And you were talking a lot about Title IX.
Yeah.
Do you want to like explain for people, especially because we have an international audience as well. So they might not even have ever heard of Title IX here in the U.S.
Okay, so Title IX is a collection of laws that protects many different things, but specifically discrimination within education. It's mainly known for the breakdown of gender and sex within sports. That is a very prominent part of this legislation, but it also does cover and identify and define what discrimination is not allowed in terms of disability. So it is a powerful tool in addition to the Americans with Disabilities Act and Section 504 to allow disabled chronically ill people to access education in ways that do not prohibit them from their, you know, by their disability.
And how much teeth does this have? Because with the ADA, I've had a lot of bad experiences trying to get the ADA's teeth behind anything.
That's the hard part. The teeth is hard. And it requires, as someone that advocates for things like this, I wish I didn't have to. In high school, I had to obtain lawyers to finished my high school education, and college was a same occurrence. So to actually utilize the teeth of these laws, it does require a lot of advocacy on your part. So either soliciting the advice of experts that honestly know the policies very, very, very intricately, but also the teeth comes from you knowing where your deficits lie. Where is it that you need help to overcome? And I think one of the biggest, if I could change something with education, I think the self-identification, I think, is one of the biggest obstacles. Because some people, I met one guy, he had a learning disability, I asked him, have you ever been evaluated for a learning disability? My brother has learning disability. So I kind of know some signs and different markers. And he was like, well, I've never had any sort of evaluation for that. I've, you know, up until college, I've been fine. And that is very, very possible. And I think we have to allow a space where people who may not understand their own personal, biological, physical, mental, or emotional health, if someone sees something and says, I think this is interfering with your education or not allowing you to be your best self in the classroom, how can we help you? It's not just all on the student to say, well, I need help. And I think that's where the teeth comes in. It requires so much work. And that's where the teeth, it really has to come from the individual. And I do think it is a text so much because when you're dealing with disability, it's an everyday thing. There's no clock out button. No one's coming to substitute for you with disability. You are in risk 24/7, 365. And so to then have to fight a disability and to deal with your disease process, whatever that may be, while also trying to advocate for yourself is an incredibly tiring, difficult thing.
As you were saying that, I was getting exhausted. I am such a non-confrontational person to begin with. Like, any confrontation makes me want to vomit. But like, then to have to do my studies and like keep track of all of my legal paperwork, I don't know how you did that. I'm so impressed and amazed, but I can't imagine how that would work for someone who has other disabilities, like, or trouble focusing. Like, I can't keep up with even my taxes, let alone like trying to figure out all of like the ins and outs of the legal system.
And I think
go ahead.
Oh no, I was saying, I think that's part of the keeping track. I also think that's a very, in any class, you know, they give you the syllabus and they say, this is what we're going to discover or walk through during this next 3-4 months, however the class is. And I do think there is an inherent lack of knowledge that people have, and they fucked out after the fact, like, oh, I was eligible for this or I qualify for that. And then they fucked out, it's too late. And they either had multiple classes where they did very poorly, so the GPA is poorly affected, or they have been, we all know it, in these settings, sometimes it only takes one teacher to give you a not so kind review, say your work ticket wasn't good or they were disorganized. And those were not issues that you brought upon yourself, but that the system did not allow you to help you to understand that your challenges are not challenges that you are just a lazy person or a disorganized person. You actually need help to be a functional person in the classroom. And it's possible if we have the right support.
And that is so true. And that's what like all of Access is about, is having the correct support. Now for you, did you have experience? Like, I know when I was in school, I had surgery and my teachers wouldn't give me my homework. They told me, oh, well. And so the thing about disability is we are a club everyone's welcome to. And if you're lucky enough, you'll listen to us.
Yeah.
If you're not lucky enough, you're going to suddenly become one of us. And I had sudden surgery and my teachers wouldn't, like, so I didn't even know about like any of these programs because no one clocked that I had been disabled, but the surgery was clear. And they wouldn't give me any of my assignments. And that was granted decades ago. But to give it more recent, like my son's friend fell off of a rock and he broke his back as a junior in high school.
Oh.
And he could not get the teachers to do what he needed to do. The school sent over someone to teach him at home, where they would just hand him tests and YouTube. And it was like, this is a smart kid. That kid was smart and he's still smart. He's an amazing person. But anyway, I was just saying, like, what were some of your experiences dealing with like elementary school? If I remember correctly, what you were born with, is that right?
I have something called sickle cell disease. And so I was born with it. It's funny, the experience that you highlight is not something that is uncommon, even in 2024. There are certain jobs I think that we do within life that you can do a bad job and people may or may not notice the work was either faulty or it wasn't done with a lot of care. But I think teachers do a job, and educators, where you are literally holding someone's confidence, esteem, worth in your hand. And so for a student here's the test on YouTube. And, you know, that is very, it can lead you to feel like, am I inadequate? Am I just not capable? And I think I've had very similar experiences like that, where I was in a hospital extended stay for about a month. And we finally were able to negotiate with the teacher that the work that I needed was work that I could do, but I just hadn't been given the information. All she gave me were worksheets. And she said, well, okay, you have the book, you have the worksheets, and I'll give you, my mom is a teacher, so I knew what a PowerPoint that came with the book looked like. It wasn't like she even made this herself. It came with her instructions, her instructor's manual of the book. And she said, well, you're not doing well because you're not doing well on the worksheets. The worksheets are just not good. And I said, well, ma'am, no one's instructing me on this material. So I don't know how to complete the worksheets on material. I just don't know how to do. And this was a geometry class. So like math, it all kind of stacks like a Lego. And if you don't have the bottom blocks, your top block isn't really going to matter because you don't know your bottom stuff. And I think to hear that is still happening is very disheartening, because I think I don't know where this mentality comes from, but I think there's a lot of mentality of just, I'm here to teach and that is my job and that's where it begins and ends. But I do think teaching is a very multifaceted discipline. It requires you to motivate. It requires you to hold accountability. It requires you to inspire. It is not just presenting material and saying, well, here it is, the test is on this day, and then we're finished. And so I think when you don't understand that about the educational process, students that could be the next whomever, if they don't have that support, they could be left feeling very dejected about their prospects.
I swear I could get on a soapbox for hours and talk about what you're talking, because my firm belief is anyone can learn anything. It's a matter of—
I agree with—
yeah. It's a matter of the teachers are teaching. And like, my youngest goes to school online because of disability, because my youngest has POTS. And I don't want my child being on a campus where there's 4,000 students and they've had a whole bunch of assault allegations. I do not want my child going unconscious in a place like that. So my child goes to school online. And to show you the difference, my kid had always been very shy, quiet, and a C student. And then they got to this online program where there's only 9 kids in a class. The teachers are ecstatic to teach, and they are so good, like, listening to the kids. Like, my youngest is art, all art. And the teacher's like, oh, all of my students seem to be art kids. Okay, we're learning geometry, so let's talk M.C. Escher.
Mm.
Like, they switch the curriculum to, like, right? And, like, we're D&D nerds here.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the biology teacher's like, hey, you don't seem to be loving this assignment. How about you make a fairy and tell me how it eats?
Yes.
Tell me how it digests. Like,
mm-hmm.
anyone can learn anything if you teach right. It's really, the responsibility needs to be on the teachers to teach well.
Yes.
But then the responsibility also, because I was a teacher and I was lucky enough to teach before George Bush
mm-hmm.
Jr., thank you, decided the No Kids Left Behind. That changed everything for teachers. Now it's not just the teacher's fault. Now they're only allowed to teach to a test. And it, so many things. But to stick with disability.
It is so many things. It is.
You were doing college tours, and that was something that hit me so hard, because I've been doing this job for about 7 years of interviewing disability and chronic illness. I cannot tell you how many young people I've interviewed who've left college, all before COVID, because before COVID, they're like, it's not possible. You can't do online classes.
Yeah.
But they lived in places with snow and rain, and their wheelchairs wouldn't make it through, or there's only stadium seating where they had to put their wheelchairs at the top of, like, stairs. Like,
yes.
Please hope that your brakes work, because you're going to have to balance your laptop and try to type.
And I think that, and so I think that's another obstacle when we talk about architecture. Architecture is something that is I don't think people truly understand the difficulty of trying to anticipate, does this building fit my ability? Most people don't even consider. You go into a basketball game, a lecture hall, and you sit down, you consume whatever it is you're going to consume, and you leave. But for someone that's disabled, that is far from, that's not even first consideration. You're trying to figure out, how do I get my car there? Okay, so let me get my car there. Then how do I get myself from my car to the building? What is the terrain like that I'm going to be traversing to get from my car or whatever vehicle I use to get there to the place I'm going to be staying? The place where I'm sitting, where is the bathroom or other important facilities in relation to where I am going? All these different things have to be taken into consideration for disability. And so I think when we talk about your son with POTS, and when you talk about other institutions where all we have are these stadium seating and different lecture halls that were made in the 50s and 60s that have not been updated still, I think it is a travesty, because we don't acknowledge that education is for all. And I think when we talk about architecture and those sorts of things, we implicitly exclude people. And I don't know if people will see it that way, but it is exclusionary. And to have people to not have they have the desire, they have the will, but they don't have the system support to support their dreams. That is it's sad that we still live in a society like that.
And what are some of the things you're finding on your college tours? Is there anything that surprised you?
I would say the one thing that surprised me is the fact that more people don't know their rights. More people do not know what they are or are not entitled to. They are it's taken with the belief that the institution, the university, the college has your total interest at heart. I don't want to say that the college does not have your interest at heart, but it is not in their interest to give you a full point by point understanding of, hey, you have until you do not have to take 2 tests in a week to finish a course. You actually, if you get it incomplete in a class, you have time until the next semester to finish that course. As someone into, I took a midterm and a final within 13 days. And so I did not know that I had actually a right to say, well, hold on, I was at a hospital. You can't just tell me, or you can't use the threat of a failing grade as a means of to do what you want me to do. And so I thought when I got out of college, I thought there was more education. So I was kind of prepared for students to be more educated on what they are able to do, but to see that was not the case.
That's really frustrating. What advice would you give? Because right now, a lot of juniors are getting their acceptance letters. A lot of people are doing their college tours right now. Have you found, I don't know how wide reaching this is at this moment in time. And I was hoping that we could also discuss a little bit about how people can be a part of this all over the world and film their own experiences, maybe under your own hashtag. But this would be such a great thing for parents and kids who are starting to look at college to be able to have more of a, you know, they do the best party schools, they do the best performing schools. Can we please have a, like, I mean, I'm sure my child will find weed somewhere. I my kids are resourceful. If I found weed, I'm sure they can. They'll know the party schools. Can we at least discuss like whether it's like wheelchair accessible first?
Exactly. Yes. And those sort of things are important. I went to Morehouse College and I think architecture, the thing, I didn't know this when I got there, but the school is situated on a hill.
Oh, geez.
Literally to get most of the classes, you have to walk up this hill that almost feels like you're in San Francisco. And when I tell you, like literally, there are people that would just avoid the middle of the campus because you're not trying to walk up a hill. And I do think we need that. It would be great to have a list of schools. And there are some research firms that have done what they would consider, they have very long words, but I would say they're trying to the disability friendliness of the campus when it comes to the policies, when it comes to professor knowledge, when it comes to student support, when it comes to accountability and advocacy as far as being able to access Title IX sources and policies and adjudicators if you have a complaint or a dispute with a professor or a department. Those are just enormously beneficial things. We can look up things for medical school. What medical school is hiring or is getting these types of students, and what school should I go to for my pre-med program? So why should I have that same thing for people with disability? And I think the biggest advice I would have for high school students would just to be, number one, understand that you are your biggest advocate. If you even feel like, well, I don't know, this just doesn't feel right, follow your gut. Don't just accept someone's word for it that, oh, well, this is okay or this is fine. No, follow up. Number two, paper is your friend. If you have a conversation with anybody about anything, make sure after each meeting, Dr. Smith, I'm glad we met today, discussed my accommodations, and we discussed that my accommodations as a result of my hospital stay will be on April the 30th instead of April the 17th, like the rest of the students. And I'll be glad to take my test at that time. Writing is your best friend. There are so many instances, myself included, where I thought my word was enough. And unfortunately, it is sorely not. I wish it was different, but it's not. And so I would just say, make sure that you know for yourself, trust your gut, and write, notate everything.
Best advice. And if I could just throw in a little something as an ADD insanity nightmare of a person, like a basically rabid raccoon stitched into a human suit. The only thing that's gotten me through is accordion files.
Mm-hmm.
And just a thing with 12 little things. So you have your January files, your February files, your March files. And that way you can go month by month. And then now that we're all modern, we have Notes app or Google Keep. Just photograph that, hashtag it. You will find it. I swear that's the only way that I can get my medical stuff together.
Exactly.
But you're right about the words. Like if you say it, it's just not enough. You have to have the emails. You have to have like the backup. Just think about when you're watching like TikToks and you're like, okay, but where's the proof? That's really interesting, but I need receipts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As the kids would say, give me receipts.
Yes, I need the receipts. That keep your receipts. Keep your receipts. That is the,
absolutely.
That, as the kids would say, keep your receipts.
I'm learning so much language on TikToks and now my kids are making sense to me. I'm like, that's what, you cannot, you know, I'm here. I understand now. You had said something that was so beautiful about achieving your dreams. And you said, specifically, I am not unique for having dreams, but I'm unique in having the opportunity to achieve them. Can you speak a little bit more about those opportunities and what people can do to help others or to help themselves?
I think so. the uniqueness is, number one, I have a mom who is Black Panther, Captain America, Storm, Wolverine, The Flash.
Go mom, the Marvel moms.
Everything, DC, Marvel, I don't care who you want to name. She's one of them, everybody, all in one. So I have to give her like the biggest pump up. So I think that's number one, how I was able to. And so I think that's the first part. I will say, secondly, that it is a persistence. Don't give up. And I'll give like a little personal anecdote. And where I'm from in Chicago, like marching band is like the huge thing. Like that was like something I always wanted to do. Like when I was a kid, I saw a drum line with Nick Cannon and oh my goodness, I was like, I'm going to be him. That's going to be me. And so I get to high.
You seem much nicer than him though.
I hope so. I hope so. I'm pretty down to earth. I try to keep it, you know, on the earth. And I went there freshman year, me and my best friend, Eddie. We were like, we're going to make the drum line. And I got it. Sick. I had a crisis like 2 weeks into it. And he was like, you know, man, I don't know. This is just, you know, it seems like a lot for you. Like, are you sure you really want to do this? I was like, yes. Sophomore year. This is when I was in the hospital for a month with my geometry teacher and her whole shenanigans. I was in a hospital for a month. I got back to the pool within like, it was like December-ish. So I missed pretty much the whole semester. And I was like, I still want to try. And he was like, then do it. Like, this is not, sometimes you got to read the writing on the wall. And I'm like, I am going to read the writing on the wall. I'm just going to, you know, I was like, okay, well, I started walking. I was like, maybe 10 minutes a day. And this is like maybe March of that year. And marching band started in August. So I was like, okay, maybe I can get like a mile. That kind of gets my body ready. So January, the band director, I said, well, Mr. Ains, I can't like do everything that like the regular kids do, but I don't want to be in the band. Like I really, and thankful to him, he was supportive and he actually did something he had never done before. So I was like, he was like, well, you can just come in halfway through the show. So that way you're not doing the whole thing. You just do half of it and you still be in the band, but that way you can conserve your energy and you can still be a participant. And you remember that, Mr. Ains? Like, yeah, I got you. I'm gonna do that. So I had people that supported my dream. And so I do think that I know if you're not disabled, you say, well, how can I help? Be supportive. Sometimes it's thinking outside the box. No, I was never going to be the guy that was marching from the gym to the football field. That was never going to be me. And there was a moment I was kind of sad about that. But when I understood, like my mom says, you may not do it the way everyone else does it, but you do it and it's just done different. And so there's nothing wrong with that different. And so I went in halfway in my junior year, I was in the marching. So I just think you just have to be perseverant and be flexible. I would say, I heard this the other day, be persistent with your dreams, but be flexible in their presentations. And so
oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I heard that. I was like, I gotta. So I wish it was a little thing on X, Twitter X. And somebody said anonymous. So I wish I could give a person a shout out.
I'm just happy that something nice happened on Twitter. I mean, that just made my day. I haven't been on that in 6 months.
There's one little sliver.
And Elon didn't shut it down? What? That's too nice for me, man.
I will gatekeep it because, like, I don't want it. So I think that is what you just have to do. And it will be messy. It took me, it's hard because I thought it would be different. But it took me 8 years to get a four-year degree. And so I just think being persistent. Don't think because I've never seen someone do it or I don't know anyone that's done it. I really do think it was during the pandemic I can't think of the name of the documentary, but it was about the care that there were a lot of disabled people and chronically ill people and how they were really at the vanguard of fighting for disability rights and disability equity. And I think one thing I gained from was that there was no way. And so I think when you feel like, well, how do I do this? What is the possibility? What is the path? Just know you're not alone. You're not the first one that didn't see the path and doesn't see it with you. That's okay. But let me tell you something. If you believe it, anybody will believe it. If I believe that. I believe I will be in the march. I believe I was going to graduate college. And I think if it requires a societal effort. This isn't a one, you know, one person will just, I can list everything and self-made. No, I think for anyone to accomplish anything in life, but specifically disability, it requires even people that are not disabled. And I think sometimes we put limits on people because we have not seen it done. And we think, well, how could that possible? What is the likelihood of that even succeeding? But there was, at one point or another, you did something in your life that maybe you're not disabled, but you thought was, or people thought around you was impossible. And you accomplished that. So if you could give that same benefit of hope and pursuit to someone else, wouldn't that be great? And I think that is where we have to really be pushing for, is to push that other people, because disabled people have dreams and they have ideas and wishes and contributions that are made but not acknowledged, or that are just totally unacknowledged. And it's really important for us to understand that when you damper someone's dreams, it's not that person you're affecting. You might see that person in front of you and say, well, you're not good for this job, but there's someone behind them. And they're looking at that person and say, well, they didn't make it, so what's the point? So I think if you think about, I'm not helping one person, I'm helping a community. Maybe if you think about it from that perspective, when you give one person the opportunity to help accomplish their dream, you're helping give light to a community for someone to feel like it's possible. And that's all I think anyone with disability asked for, is an opportunity that anyone else has. I don't think anyone with disability says, give me something. I want to work for that. I want that. I can do anything anyone else can do. And it's not a limitation. It's not a, this is who I am, where I am, and what I can accomplish. And I am great at doing that.
There is so much to unpack there, and I don't know which way to go. But one of the things you had said, I just wanted to put like an underline through, because the thing I've been talking to you, since teenagers are a huge part of my life right now, is getting them to talk to themselves as nicely as they would talk to someone else. So if you're telling yourself, I can't do this, it seems too big, it seems too much, just think about if like your best friend was saying that, like, would you support them in that? Or would you be like, hey, maybe calm down your dreams? Like,
yeah.
I don't think most of us would tell our friends to calm down our dreams. So
no,
be as nice to yourself as you would be to others. And
yes,
when you're talking about whether we can imagine it or not, I wanted to go into this a bit because I know you're a movie fanatic, and I am so interested in how people are portrayed in the media. And when we've limited what the wider world thinks they know about disability with these characters that just want nothing more than to get out of wheelchairs, slow clap as they decide to die for like their friends and family's comfort. Like,
yeah.
I'm done with these tropes. And I'm so tired because we, like, up until like the last year, we've had no real good representation.
No.
And I'm just curious what you think about that. Because like the media is such a big part, because we don't exist for a lot of people because there's no real good transportation. I live in San Francisco area, and BART is not wheelchair accessible. You cannot use BART if you use a wheelchair. It is not possible. You cannot use Muni with a wheelchair unless you've got at least 6 hours. So I was talking to someone, they're like, you run a disability podcast? There's not a lot of people out there like for that. That's real niche. And like, there's billions of us. And they're like, no, I don't see anyone. I'm like, that's my point. You don't see us because there's no access for us to leave our house. I can't even go to my downtown because there's no sidewalks. I'd have to go out with the cars in my wheelchair. So I'm sorry, that's a long way around to, what do you think about media and disability?
So just a quick tangent.
Yeah.
Every time destruction and I see sidewalk out, I think that is the most travesty of things. Like, I understand construction requires improvement and changes, but when we do make those changes, we give a detour for cars, but we don't give a detour for disability. We just say, well, the sidewalk's out, so
oopsie,
it'll be fixed. So sorry, that's not fair. And so I do think I would, you know, that is something where I just, a little small thing I note all the time when you talk about like just transportation and things like that, and sidewalks, things like that. But I think in media, I think it's unfortunate because there's a couple of things happening I think is a very great disservice. Number one, there is this hyper success where you have on one hand someone that, oh, they have whatever, and they're a doctor, they're a lawyer, they're great. What is wrong with you? Why are you not doing whatever? And so there's this flip side of where I think people see like, well, either you're super successful or we don't see you at all. And I think that is a great, great, great disservice, because that is my grandmother. She's a stay-at-home nurse, and she told me this since I was a kid. And when I was a kid, I didn't really understand it. But she says, we interact with disability every day and we may or may not know it. And I was like, when I finally understood it, I was like, we get so caught up on this. And I've always, I don't artists, but I think we have to do better with this forward faith disability. I think it's all caught up in the fact that they look disabled. And even in media, I understand media is a visual medium. And so it may be harder to convey very intricate details about how a person experienced disability. But disability isn't just a physical limitation or a physical obstacle. There are other, even I would dare say, very significant emotional and mental obstacles that are a consequence of disability that we may think, well, oh, the biggest hurdle someone that is paralyzed has is they're in a wheelchair. That may or may not be true. That it depends on specifically the person, and it depends on circumstance and what is we are trying to address in a specific situation. And I think for media, we have to really get better at understanding that how disability presents very varied. It is not a one size fits all. And I do think we have to stop this all or nothing, and where we either see something that's successful or we don't see anything. And I think that comment that the person made of that such a niche sector is patently untrue. It's not even like a, oh, you can make it true with some statistics. It's just not true. And I think how you discussed the media representation of disability affects people greatly. And we've known that media people's views and attitudes since it was invented in the 19th century.
Very fair point. Do you have any like favorite or anything that you liked seeing in disability in media? Was there anything that you were like, oh yeah, actually, thanks. That was awesome. Like for me, I'll talk while you think. A Shadow and Bone was my favorite so far. And that's a Netflix fan. I'm a total nerd. I love fantasy. But it was the first time I got to see actual disability where a cane got used in a fight scene where I'm like, okay, no, I probably couldn't do that without getting hurt. But man, that was badass. That was so fucking cool. And like you have like people with actual trauma and dealing with trauma that doesn't just go away by the next episode. You had real injuries that stayed throughout the whole thing. Like it was such a refreshing like moment. And it needs to be said that the author of that book is chronically ill. And she had such a heavy hand in the production of it, which worked out so well. It's one of my favorite shows of all time. I will take no notes on that. I love that show. It made me so happy. But like from a fantasy perspective, all I ever see in Marvel and other kinds of things is disability and chronic pain make villains.
Yes.
And that makes me very upset in the fantasy world. Like you look at Davros and like Doctor Who, I'm really a nerd. I told you, I warned you. But Doctor Who I love, but Doctor Who is very like up until like last year where they're like, hey, this seems to be something that they're all mad at us about.
Mm-hmm.
The wheelchair was the villain. Like, you know, the guy in the wheelchair was the villain.
Yes.
Do you have anything that you saw done well?
It's funny you mentioned that because I watched a few, once I read an article about that trope within Doctor Who, because I wasn't familiar, it was maybe like 2-3 years ago. It was like the middle or the end of 2021. And I was like, man, I didn't know this was even a thing in Doctor Who. I always saw it was the universal acclaim of Doctor Who. And so I think when we talk about that, how disability is seen as this, and I do think it is very sad, but I think one good representation I felt, or at least it resonated with me, was when I really saw, I know it was a kid's, but it was fantasy and it felt, the character was minor, but it felt authentic. It was just a little monster standing at the bus stop with his crutches. And I don't know what that was for me. It was in, what was the movie? It was a Pixar movie.
Oh.
The brothers and they're finding the sword and the dad.
Outward. I love animation. Yeah.
It was so short and I think the character may have said like two things in like 40 seconds. But I think what was with it felt authentic. It felt like it was just a disabled person waiting for the bus. It didn't feel like it was this big show of, oh, they're disabled. And it's like, we're just regular people. Like that this big hubbub is, I don't, you know? And so I think to see that authenticity was refreshing for me because I would like to see more of that authenticness and how trauma is multifaceted. It is not something that is just a one-off thing. And I think when we talk about with disability, the trauma you're facing is something you're presently battling, but also in the past as well, in the future, because I can say, you talk about your son, that is definitely, I can say, very difficult to have those experiences within education. And so there, you know, it is some recollecting and reckoning with those previous experiences while trying to stay in the present moment and be your best self while also giving your best foot forward to the next opportunity, the next class or test, exam. And that's not something I really think is really understood, that this disability, it doesn't begin and end with a diagnosis. It is so much more broader than that.
And that's why we started this podcast and why we usually tag this with our different disabilities, is because I wanted a place for people to go where they would be like, I was diagnosed with this and I want to hear what life is like from someone who actually experiences this. Because when we get diagnosed, we're diagnosed by doctors who don't live this every day. They see us every day, maybe, but they don't live in these bodies and they don't know what the ups and downs are of these disorders. And there are ups. There are superpowers to what we do and what we have.
Oh, yeah.
I am one of the best out-of-the-box thinkers. Like, oh my gosh, I could invent anything.
Oh, yeah.
I am the mother of invention and two very lovely children and
yeah,
foster mother to all the fluffy and feathery things. But like, I can think out of the box like no one else can. We have superpowers.
Yes.
With what we have, there are upsides. And I think those can't be ignored either. Like Stephen Hawking was very clear that he didn't, while he was mourning some of what he lost in his lack of abilities, he celebrated his ability to not have the distractions. He was able to live in his mind. And I don't think we can discount his own words whenever he was making these art pieces when he died of, he's finally free. It's like, cool, he gets to say that. He didn't. He said things very different. And
yeah,
that lack of listening in the wider culture is so frustrating. And in going into that, you had a really interesting video on your TikTok. I did a deep dive. I love your TikToks. But you talked about Kate Middleton, and that's the last time I'll say her name because she's very clear she does not want our attention. But I did want to just bring it to her. And there's another TikToker, I'm not going to mention her name, but she just passed. And she was, there's a lot going on where someone has a health issue where the wider public feels that they are owed everything and not what the person's willing to give out. Now with Kate Middleton to add and say, okay, with the princess, that's a little different because she is a public figure who is paid by the public. And that is a little bit of a different experience. That's still a human being. You had a great take on that. I just wanted you to kind of give it to the wider world. And wider world, go check out Still Swimming on TikTok because you will not be bored. It's fantastic.
Thank you. I think that it is very, I don't know, came of age with social media. So I grew up, I got a Facebook account. I was like in high school. And I don't know when, maybe you can let me know, was it always a thing where people felt this gumption, I guess is the best word I can say, to just feel entitled to information? Because I don't really, from my perspective, I don't understand that.
I love this weird generational divide we have because like every single generation in the last like 10 years has had such a divide because we generally do generation by technology access. And the technology is like from my oldest to my youngest is 6 years. And those two are in two different universes because my oldest grew up where there was like cute little things, but there's tune out ability. My youngest grew up with iPad. There's no tune out. It's all the time always there. So that's really funny because you and I, like I grew up with none of this. I grew up in the 80s. Like dial up was, I remember that Skrillex cat mating sound like you would not believe. I hear it in my nightmares. AOL, Friends, Live, all this stuff, man. And that was when I was in high school when that came out.
Yeah.
Facebook wasn't until I was an adult. I remember when this is how old I am. My friend was the wife of employee number 5 at Facebook. I remember Facebook when I visited his offices in downtown Palo Alto. Like,
okay.
I mean, I'm old. I am so old. I'm not kidding. I am old.
No.
But like, I was there when Facebook was being built. I was literally there when Facebook was being built. So it's really interesting to hear from your generation that grew up with like people sharing everything. Like, hey, I'm having a diagnosis.
I guess I just asked because I thought there's some level of separation, at least. And it seems like it was just like such wildfire. And I think I felt it was so destructive because these were literally just theories based on rumor.
Yeah.
And I think I understand she's important. And some people, I'm not from that country, so I don't fully understand the fascination. But I understand that is part of your culture and I respect that. But I do think we have to respect she is a human being. And human beings deserve dignity. And we should not dress up invasion of privacy and disrespect as, and I think that's where I felt was a little too, it was too
much. Man, I was so torn on this issue, and you just broke it right down on the intention of what's behind is the important part. Like, you know, when it's just you and me, like, you know, someone in our lives might be like, I don't mind people asking me about my disability nicely. I do mind when someone yells at me. But, and that's happened. I've had people pray over me. It's not my jam.
I've had that. Oh, and he's like, okay, I didn't ask for that, but you know.
Yeah, cheers, mazel tov, blessed be, thanks. I'll go dance in the woods for you.
Yeah.
Cool. Please stop scaring my children. They're terrified right now.
Yeah.
But like, you know, when people want to know because they want to be helpful, I don't even mind if they're being curious. I mind when they want to use it against me later.
Yes.
And I don't know if you have this experience of being infantile. My voice is killing me. But being treated like a child. When I'm in my wheelchair, apparently my husband is the only intelligent person in the room. I'm now a child. They'll ask him how I'm feeling. And so where was I going with this? Now I remember. Okay, so that's where I was going with this. My only beef with what you were saying about Kate Middleton was that I feel concerned for her because the castle has not been nice to the women who have married into the family. And I think that's where at least like a certain percentage, and not saying everyone, because my God, there was some like, whoa, calm down. Do you not have a life? If you have nothing better to do, let me introduce you to politics and writing petitions.
Yes.
But like the people who are like, hey, maybe she's not okay. Maybe they're taking care of her. That's a valid concern. And, you know, like when you're hearing like the wife of the Scientology, like the lead of Scientology is now missing for 5 years. I feel like when we're asking, hey, is she good? There's a valid reason behind when we're asking the castle, hey, is she good? We're kind of concerned.
And I think it's funny, we talk about celebrity. And most average people have not interacted with Britney Spears. Most people, we know of her. She's been in the public eye since she was a teenager. We know of her. But we were concerned. And she felt the difference. There was a distinction. So I think what you're seeing is very clear to identify the difference of true concern about someone's well-being and their state of mind, being, health, all those things, and just being invasive and disgusting. And we all rallied around Britney for her, the fight against her conservatorship, her mental health, and all these different things for her own well-being, not because we wanted some new music, because we wanted something from her, because we wanted her to be her best self. And I think it's funny how sometimes we can look and have two very similar people, because Kate Middleton, she wasn't as famous as early as, and so I think we have to look on those instances of we can see the right thing to do. And I think it is a great concern to have when we talk about a institution that has shown a very flagrant disregard historically, not just even in the most recent history of its iteration for the women in its, I guess, charge, membership, however you want to, you know.
The membership, I love that.
So
with that, you had talked a little bit in the video about what you think someone should do. Like, if you are aware that someone in your life might have been diagnosed with cancer or might have been diagnosed with something, or is just like they're going through a hell of a time, what's the way that you would approach that in a way that's respectful to them to show what true concern looks like instead of curiosity that could be tinged with some like malignancy?
I think for me, it is listen. And it's not just a listen with your ears type of listening. It's a listen with your eyes. My sister, she's a social worker and she's always giving us these little like lessons on creating a welcoming environment. And so she always says to me, to create a welcome environment, you have to be willing to learn. Are you entering the situation with trying to provide something or are you trying to learn about what this person really needs? And I first starts before you even have a single syllable uttered out of your mouth, what is the intention you're arriving with? Because people are very perceptive and intuitive. They don't need things spelled out for them to understand that maybe they're not here for the totally right reasons. I think that's where you have to really start with yourself. And if you want to help, great. But if you're saying, well, no, I know my grandfather, he's that, you know, old school, the man gets it done. And, you know, that's who he is. Like, he's 79 years old. He's not going to change. But I think why I mention him is because I know that he's maybe not the person. And ask yourself, are you the person that this person you've helped from? If they need help, because we're all not capable of providing the same thing. My grandfather, if I need something done, he's going to get it done. If I said, Grandy, I'm in Atlanta and I need my walker and I need my cane, I need it shipped to Uncle Khalil's house in Chicago. My grandfather could get it done. But if I need someone to lean my shoulder on and just vent about what's happening, going through a tough time, he's not really the person for that. And I think we have to be honest with ourselves about what we can and cannot provide to people. But when you try to provide things that are above your pay grade, you can end up doing more damage and then actual more help.
That's an incredible amount of self-awareness, but that's amazing. I'm the wrong person to do this interview, but someday I would love to hook you up with a friend of mine, Jason, who did a whole series on masculinity and disability, because I'm the wrong person to have that conversation, obviously, but, or maybe not obviously, who knows, but I don't feel comfortable like having any insight in this whatsoever. He's brilliant and amazing. And what you're talking about your grandfather, it strikes a chord with me that I feel like people who present masculine have a whole different experience with disability than I do, for better or worse. But I do feel like it's a different thing that y'all are dealing with.
I would say just a quick, I think it's very interesting when you talk about what we see as gender roles and how people, what we think each gender provides. And I think I've seen it even, I don't think I'm like qualified, but I can just say my observation. My mom has sarcoidosis and she is a mom. And I think sometimes we don't allow, whether it's a man or a woman, to say, I am disabled. We don't believe that that is somehow a reason. It's like, well, get it done. It is not a reason. And I think if I could say about masculinity, I think we don't allow for that. And even I think from what I've observed with my mom, we don't allow for that. It's like, oh, okay. And what? Like the house is not this and you're not this and what's going on? And I think we have to really understand that our expectations of people can sometimes be more damaging than our illness itself at times, because these expectations are very, very unreachable, even for people that are not disabled. So when you add disability on top of that, I think it is so, a lot. It's a lot. And so I hear people that are parents that are disabled, I just have to give them so much energy, so much love, because I know.
Well, give me energy. Please give us energy.
What you're doing is the work of superheroes and folklore combined. Serious.
I mean, honestly, again, I'm going to go back to, there are superpowers of being disabled. I had a very energetic child who would just run. He was just like, he ran before he could walk, which is hilarious considering I'm his mother. And if I'm running, you better do that too, because even when I was healthy, that means something's very wrong. Like, I do not run for fun. I do not understand that. But because I was in a wheelchair a lot in public spaces, he would sit on my lap. He would run away. He'd want to be on the ride. Like, let's go, mom. Like, see how fast you can go. So like, there are some upsides to being a disabled parent. Like, the kids tend to love the wheelchair and they don't run away.
Yes.
Friday night, you can play bumper cars. It's fabulous. You can also, and I have to say, as one of the things when we were talking about getting older, being a middle-aged woman, oh, thank fucking God. I love the cloak of invisibility. Oh my God.
Yes.
When I was 17 and my doctor's like, you're not going to walk after 30. It's just not going to, you're going to be in a wheelchair. My dad cried. I was so happy. I started to laugh because I was like, no one's going to be able to grab my ass. Oh my God, I'll be able to walk down the street, not walk, wheel. And if a man's annoying that can go over his toes, that's better than the hat pins. Yeah. The safety and bubble, personal space bubble. Cheers. I mean, now I'm old and I don't have to worry about it anymore, but back then it was a win.
Yes.
I told you I'd kidnap you and we're in an hour. I did want to just ask you one more question. I stole it from Tim Ferriss, just to be fair. I know we're laughing at Elon Musk and us in the whole same universe, but I do love this question. Especially when we're talking about innovation and ways to streamline things. Is there anything that you bought for under $100 that you're like, this made it better? It's like, we're sold so much bullshit as disabled people. Like, this will change your life. This will make things better. This is made for you. And it's like, I have a graveyard of shit that I bought at 2 a.m. because I thought it'd make things better.
I think the one thing that I did buy that, honestly, I wasn't expecting to be even anything. It was supposed to be a Christmas gift. We have this like thing where we exchange, like, I guess you call it Secret Santa. And we ended up having not enough people show up. So everyone took home a couple of things they brought. And it was a weighted ice thing that you put under your eyes. And I was like, this is just wonderful. This is like, and it cost me, so it wasn't even funny. But it was just wonderful because it kind of gives me a moment to kind of just lock everything out, kind of get in my own space and be, you know, at peace with myself. And I think that's something that since December has been like really transformative for me in a way that I was like, I didn't even think anything of it. It was really just a gift because my brother has migraines and I was like, oh, this would be beneficial for him. But he was one of the people that didn't even join up. And when I told him about it, he was like, oh, I have one anyway. So I was like, okay.
Mine now.
Yeah. So that it was very like a gift to myself in a roundabout kind of. That's the best thing I've bought right there.
So you should always buy things you'd like anyway, just in case it comes back to you. That's a great idea, Sarah.
And that's what my sister said. She said, things you like, because you never know. It might come back to you, and then you might use it, and you might think it's the best thing ever. I'm like, it might happen.
I mean, that's how I buy clothes, is since I know it's going to end up in my youngest closet anyway. Like, I'll just buy that one, like, the stuff I want to wear.
Yes, that's how you do it.
At least I thought it would work. Instead, all of my stuff is in that child's closet. So I'm like, love, it's just not fair.
I think even that, I think you kind of started the interview, you talk about procrastination and talk about timeliness and punctuality. I think a lot of the things that we talk about, especially when it comes to the time orientation, whether it's on time, whether it's late, whether it's the best ability is availability, all these different things, it is very hurtful to disabled people because it makes you feel like, can I not show up? But I'm trying my best. And it's not like I'm purposefully trying to dodge something, but I'm actually trying to be, you know. And, you know, we even labeling, I think if you have some sort of, because my brother, he has a dyslexia and ADD. That was a word that I remember he told us, like when he was like 19, he was like, I don't really like that word. I'm like, what word? Procrastination. And I was like, why? He was like, because I don't feel like I do that, but I do feel like my time just goes, but people say I'm just not doing it right. And they say I'm procrastinating when I really am trying my best. And so I think there's a wholesale change that when we talk about how we discuss even innocuous things. So when we talk about gifts under $100 that can be transformative, things that may seem very small and minute can have very impactful and transformational changes.
I almost want to keep you for another hour after that point. My God, you'll have to come back and chat more about that because there's so much to be said about language and disability and what we put our values on. We're putting our values on things that aren't, let me see, that aren't virtue-based. So showing up on time isn't a virtue. It might help some people, but it's not like it makes you a good person. And somehow people keep talking about it like it makes you a good person.
Yeah.
And we don't punish cruelty.
No.
And that's, if there's like, I'll stand for a lot. I'll handle a lot. I'll handle different views of opinions. I will not handle cruelty.
Vigorous.
And like, there's nothing worse to me than someone who's actively trying to be cruel, but there's so many other things that people put in front of that. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
No, that's it. That's what we punch at is cruelty. We do not punch at anything else.
Yeah. No, we don't.
At least you and I won't.
Yes, we agree on that 100%.
I do hope you'll come back. I have enjoyed this so much. So for everyone, we've had a lot of tumultuous stuff happening. I've been very sick. Some people that were going to come on and run podcasts on the network have gotten too sick to do so. So we're in a little bit of change, but we're still trying to produce as much as we can. So thank you. Be kind, be gentle, be a badass, and I'll see you soon. And go to TikTok and follow Still Swimming. Absolutely great content. And if you come up with a hashtag that you want people to tweet, post their own college experiences and what their college campuses look like for disability, let me know. And we'll put in the show notes at the highest point so people can do that. And I'll do a separate video for that too.
Okay. Can I think about it? Get back to you like tomorrow morning?
Absolutely. No, I'm not going to make you come up with like a full content strategy right now. I promise.
I can see. Okay, I got it.
All right. Thank you so much.
I'll definitely be back if you have me because this was very great. And I think it's something that's sorely needed.
I have had so much fun. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. To find out more about today's episode, including show notes, transcripts, and more, please visit invisiblenotbroken.com. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also support this show by heading over to our Patreon or by sharing these episodes. We are non-advertising, and our growth is thanks to you listeners. Thank you to our hosts Monica and Nick for a wonderful discussion. This episode was edited by Luke Spine and me, Ariana Alter. Last but not least, be kind, be gentle, and be a badass.